Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
Nancy, I think you do great work, and I think that you also should never stop doing what you're doing and keep pushing forward and mentoring people.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. Today is a second juicy conversation with Trey Hearn Pollard, and we're talking about life in the Twin Cities since George Floyd's murder on May 25th. We've got a sponsor today, Sally Doyle. If you're thinking about your finances and wondering where are they at during this time, now would be a good time to have a profit strategist and innovative thinker kind of take a look at your financials and help you to navigate your way through this really tentative and tenuous and stressful time as we redesign how we're doing our businesses. So you can reach Sally at 1-651-208-8151. I also have her website information on the podcast show notes. Trey Hearn is running a company called We Push for Peace. It's a nonprofit that he started. Was it in 2010 or?
It was about 10, 11 years ago. Yeah. Give or take.
Okay. Give or take a year. You need to nail down that date just from a business perspective.
Okay. not a problem.
Yeah. Okay. Trey Hearn has been a resource and an advocate for the inner city of Minneapolis and St. Paul. And on a broader scale, their mission is really, why do you say push for peace? It's kind of a... normally when we think of peace, we're not thinking of pushing.
Because, I mean, strategically, that's exactly what I'm doing.
Yeah, organizing and moving ahead. And
I want it to be peaceful for everybody, not just a certain race, culture, religion, et cetera.
Yeah.
Like, we are pushing for peace. And until we sustain that on a consistent basis throughout all our communities, nationalities, race, et cetera, we gonna keep pushing.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. It's a very fitting name.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you're sticking with it. A lot of times when we start out a venture, we don't always stick with the name because as we get our ventures into the marketplace and start helping people, we kind of feel like, you know, we need to reshape the mission. But for you, it was crystal clear right from the beginning.
It was. Again, the Lord put it on my heart. I came up with the logo. If you look at the logo, you see one hand reaching down to grab the other one to help that person come up. I want to pull you up. I want to help you as much as I can. Because oftentimes in the black community, when somebody make it to the top of the barrel, it appears like it's always somebody trying to pull them back down. Right.
Yeah.
And so, that's the implications of the logo. Again, you see one hand reaching down to grab the other one as a form of help.
Yeah.
So that's where the logo came from.
Okay. Well, Reverend Sharpton, he really pushed the point across, get the knee off our neck.
Yes. I was at the service. I talked to Reverend Sharpton on many occasions. He did an extraordinary job at the service in regards to... delivering a message.
Right.
Oftentimes when people get in front of a microphone, you know, it kind of becomes just a talking point for them, right? But when the Reverend spoke at the service, he had a message, and he certainly delivered that message.
Yeah.
And so when I'm behind a microphone, that's specifically what I try to do. It's like I have a message, and I want to get this message across. Now, in doing so,
yeah,
you know, I may offend some people. Some people may not agree with what I say, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
That's part of leadership.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But the important thing is that you are really connected and grounded within yourself.
Absolutely.
So when you're out in the community, you have a real commitment to an idea of how you can execute peace.
Absolutely.
And bring people together.
Absolutely. Because, you know, from the rioting to the protesting, et cetera, to where we are now, the message seems to me that it's back to business as usual. And that's extremely sad in this time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's evenings that when I'm on my way home at 3-4 o'clock in the morning, that I get emotional. Because, again, with us only being 3 weeks, almost 4 weeks removed from the murder of George Floyd, we've had over 170-something shootings.
Wow.
We've had 5 murders. And this is black-on-black crime.
Mm-hmm.
And we had millions of people when George Floyd got murdered by law enforcement, and we should have. But we should still have the same amount of people when we in North Minneapolis killing each other.
Yeah.
See, divide and conquer, right? This is that divide and conquer moment that I'm talking about.
Okay.
Right? Perception is everything in the public's eye. However we look at it, we may not agree with it, but perception is everything.
Yeah.
An individual said to me, are you with the Black Lives Matter? And I said, no, because all lives matter to me, first of all. Second of all, the perception that is given is that, okay, they're going to show up and show out when somebody else does something to us. But when we're doing it to ourselves, you don't see not one of them.
Why is that, do you think?
I don't agree with that.
Okay. Is it because they have a different focus or what?
How can you say your focus is Black Lives Matter when
your brothers are killing each other?
When our brothers and sisters are killing each other. Okay,
yeah.
So what? Define what that means to me then.
Yeah.
Because if you're saying they matters, then I can actually say Black Lives Matter to me. I can actually say that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I'm not just over here when somebody else does something to us. I'm over here when we're doing it to each other.
Yeah.
So do they matter to me? Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that 65-70% of the people that actually use that phrase, how can you say that when you're not present when they're murdering each other, but you're only willing to be present when, say, law enforcement.
Yeah, when it's institutional.
Yeah, now we want to show up in numbers. But I've said this from day one, and I'm going to say it again. I was raised from an accountability standpoint.
Yeah.
And until we take a look in the mirror and figure out how we're going to stop this, we can't expect anything to change, period.
Yeah, and well, that's what I'm concerned about. Like, I'm thinking twice now when I go down into Minneapolis, and I'm just a first-tier suburb out here, you know. So I'm connected a few blocks away from Minneapolis.
Yes.
But I'm starting to, you know, I'm like, what, like, because the crimes are also happening during the day.
And
how
when I hear things like that, even from you.
Yeah.
Right. It just allows me to know how relevant my work really is because,
yeah,
like you or anyone else shouldn't have to live that way. Minneapolis and St. Paul are two great cities and have a lot to offer.
Yeah.
And you have people that's afraid to come into Minneapolis due in part to the senseless violence that's been going on over the last 2 weeks.
Well, and I'm thinking, and how do you build out a business community if they're not going to be able to have the business people because they're not feeling like the communities are building back up?
Right.
So what are you thinking? What are you seeing now right now the violence has not, it's continued. It's morphed into something other that's equally been a problem in Minneapolis for a long time.
Yes, especially during this time. You know, you come out of the winter months and you go into the summer months.
Yeah.
You typically have a spike in violence, right? One of the council members stated that we need some preventative measures. I totally disagree with that. We have to have some intervention, because how can you prevent something that's already happening?
Yeah.
You have to be able to intervene, right?
So what do you think is the reasons for the increase in black-on-black crime?
Well, honestly, the root of the problem is a lot of these kids have a lot of mental issues, traumatic brain injuries. And that doesn't come from somebody hitting you in your head. It's just come from repeated tragedy. So losing
trauma on trauma.
Trauma on trauma on trauma. And these kids having never dealt with it. You have adults that has had losses and never dealt with it.
Yeah.
Except they know how to articulate that pain and they know how to deal with it. Whereas that these kids, you come off of COVID, being in the house for almost 4.5 months.
Yeah.
Then a lot of these kids, young men and young women, you know, they've lost best friends and brothers and sisters and mothers and et cetera to violence. Mm. And then on top of this, on top of COVID and the losses that they've already been dealing with, a lot of them have ADHD, OCD, and they've never been treated for it. They don't have medication for it. And even when they have medication for it, they too busy drinking and getting high, so the medication don't even work. And then on top of that, they look up on Facebook and see a black man outright getting murdered by Minneapolis police. In the black community, you have a group of individuals that's intelligent, that is dignified, and they have a lot of integrity.
Yeah.
Those are three major emotions that everybody possesses. In the black community, when you continue to trample on those three components, what you get is what you got. An eruption.
Yeah.
So one of the things we need to be able to do, and one of the things that I'm working on within the organization is creating that space for those young men and women to be able to talk to licensed psychologists, start a dialogue, start being able to talk about some of the things you've been through, some of the things you're going through, some of the things you deal with on a day-to-day basis. That's how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, like, for organizations like myself, so say Black Lives Matter.
Okay.
Over the course of the George Floyd incident, et cetera, I think they raised maybe $23 million.
Mm. Yeah, it's a lot of money.
Literally. Organizations like myself, whom are a smaller entity, but the one that's doing all the work in the community.
Yeah, is getting the less funding.
If we get that at all. If people want to know what systemic racism looks like, you have the state of Minnesota that'll put $500,000 into the Minnesota Foundation. This Minnesota Foundation is ran by a board of all Caucasian white men, right? And then they'll put grant information out to smaller organizations like mine, and now all of us is fighting for $500,000 when it's $100 million over here.
Yeah.
This is what Nakimi Palin was talking about in regards to R.T. Ryback. He is the CEO of the Minnesota Foundation. That's what you call systemic, okay?
Yeah.
Right? Instead of creating a space for individuals that they know, they call on, they work with, instead of creating a space for funding for them, they'd rather do that.
I see.
So, like, the men that I've had out there and women that was out there working with the organization as well.
Yeah.
On the front lines, trying to keep the protest safe, et cetera. That's been 2 months ago. We built the city of Minneapolis 2 months ago. It's going on 3. We haven't received a dime yet.
So that's why your organization needs funding, and people need to understand where systemic racism starts.
Absolutely.
And then when you have a situation like we're in right now, where we need new solutions and we don't want to go back to how we've created this mess, we need to create something new. The best place to go is with the people who are doing the work, who are in have the ideas of how to bridge the gap and how to get the funding that's needed for the people that are out there doing the work to change the communities.
You couldn't have said it no better, Nancy, because that's strategically the truth. Last Saturday in Uptown, I had six men.
Yeah.
My organization, Mother's Love, had a few people there. Mad Dash had a few people there. Mm-hmm. We were all on the lagoon side of Hennepin, where Cowboy Slims is, et cetera.
Yeah.
Interacting with the crowd. The night before, which was Friday, I guess they got a little loud over there, 2-3 o'clock in the morning, burning their tires on their cars, motorcycles, everybody partying, et cetera. Chief Arredondo asked us, can we come over there on Saturday night to help? We said, absolutely. When we got over there, I started, you know, immediately interacting with the kids. You know, all of them call me pops. I know a lot of them. They just over there partying, having a good time, going in. You know, they went
inside. Because they know your role.
Absolutely. They know me very well.
They know who you are.
And, and not to mention, I have two sons that grew up in the same communities. So they, again, 26, and one of them would have been 22. I lost him a year and a half ago.
Oh, I'm sorry. What happened?
Doing part two mental illness, which is why it's very imperative and very important that the information about that is shared in the community, which is why I just discussed that with you in regards to the stem of the problem.
Yeah.
But anyway, I know a lot of those young men and women. And so we were on the lagoon side. We got there about 10 o'clock. So at one point, I walked around the corner, which is on the Hennepin and Lake. I mean, on the Hennepin side itself, which is the front side of the McDonald's, okay. And I noticed that it was a restaurant right there. Mm-hmm. And then I had no idea that it was another club on the Lake Street side.
Okay.
I had no idea it was. So I seen all the kids developing at the restaurant because as they coming out of the club, they're going to get food before they go home.
Sure.
And the first thing I said to myself was like, man, we probably should put a few people around there, but I didn't have them to put around there.
Yeah.
So we stayed on the lagoon side. Come 12:30, I look around the corner again. I mean, now it's hundreds of people over there. And I'm like, man, we probably should. So I walk back to the end by the drive-thru area of McDonald's where a lot of people was assembled and a couple of the men that's out there with the organization.
Yeah.
And boom, 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 boom. The shots just started. A lot of women, a lot of kids, everybody starts scattering. The women that was around us, we got them down, got them out the way, you know, we ran to the back of the McDonald's. We then came back from around the backside of McDonald's, walking towards the Hennepin side, looked around the corner, and we noticed all the chaos. So me and my men ran down there, and it was three young ladies hit. So we—
Like teenagers?
They was all under the age of 24 years old.
Oh.
So to me— They're babies.
Yeah, right.
So we went, helped a few of the young ladies from off the other ones, et cetera, taking off our belts, trying to stop the bleeding on a lot of their wounds. One of the managers from the restaurant say, hey, you guys, you got another guy that's shot in here. So a few people walked in there, helped him the same way, put a belt around his leg, stopped the shooting. As we trying to get the crowd under control, police started pulling in. I mean, she just started walking up, some on bikes, and we like, man, we got to set up a perimeter. We got to get these kids back so that we can get these guys the help that they need.
Yeah.
This time the ambulance was on the other side of Lake Street. They can't come in because there's too many people.
Oh.
And so the manager came back outside and said, hey, it's another guy. I'm like, well, he said, no, it's another one in the back of the restaurant that was also shot.
Oh.
So we, at this point, when the ambulance pulled up, one of the officers said, hey, listen, we need to start taking these guys over to the ambulance. They can't get in here, and we're totally fine. So I grabbed the first young lady. My little brother was with me here, part of We Push for Peace, the violence prevention team. He grabbed a young lady. It was a couple of the mad dads grabbed a young man. I mean, and so we had to carry him to the ambulance. So when it was over, Chief, you know, texted me, and he was like, man, I'm so sorry you guys went through that, et cetera. And I told Chief Arredondo, I was like, I'm pissed off right now.
Yeah.
And he was like, I understand, and blah, blah, blah. I said, no, I don't think you do. Because if I had the appropriate men out there that I knew I needed,
yeah,
now we would have had that restaurant covered.
Yeah.
And I think personally that it wouldn't have happened because, again, the level of respect that a lot of these kids have, they would never do that in front of us, which is why it happened around a corner away from where we were from, where we were.
Oh, sure.
So,
yeah.
You know, we don't do as many food drives as we started out doing when it first happened with all the looting, et cetera. So now we strictly are working extremely hard on intervention with the young men and women that's out here that's doing all these shootings and these senseless acts of violence, et cetera. And again, that takes more manpower.
Yeah.
We in communication with some of the council members. We in conversation with Minneapolis police, and we simply let them know that, you know, without the appropriate resources, it's nothing more that we can do. And with more resources, we can be way more effective.
Yeah.
We certainly can. It's not even a debate.
Okay. Wow. I keep thinking about all the trauma that you just yourself have been experiencing.
Absolutely.
How are you taking care of yourself?
I actually, you know, again, like I stated to you, I lost my youngest son due to mental illness. August of 2018, and it was very trying. It was a very trying and dark time for me. It really was, and so I sought out help. I went to start talking to a psychologist.
Okay.
And she helped me identify. Obviously, you know, as a father, it's like, you know, I could have did this. I should have did this, et cetera. So that real guilt that you feel. And the reality of it is that I was an exceptional father. I was present. He actually lived with me. And which is exactly the message that I have.
Where's his mother?
She lives in South Minneapolis. She played a major part as well. It just got to a point where is that, you know.
You're not together now?
Well, no. No. We haven't been together since he was born. But
okay.
The case in point I'm making is, it got to a certain point where is that me and her sat down and talked, and she realized what I was saying was true. It's certain things that a mother can't teach a son. And so
right. They
moved with me, and she agreed with that. So they would go to South Minneapolis and spend time with their mom all the time, but they was in my household. And so, you know, I took them to his therapy appointments. I had him on the appropriate medication. I had him seeing specialists, et cetera. But it got to a point whereas, you know, he was a young man.
Right.
And this
more
is
independent.
And this is exactly where my message to these young men and women come in at. It's like, you know, the choice and the decision that you make, you know, can either help you or it's gonna hurt you. And so the choices that he continued to make was obviously continuously hurting him. And then it got to a point where is that he didn't feel like he was of substance anymore, and which is what caused him to take his own life. Mm-hmm. So I'm out here on the account of my son.
Yeah.
And I'm out here on the account of being, you know, a person that lived that life, that was a part of that life. So when I'm talking to these young men and women, they know I'm identifying exactly with what they're going through, which is why I'm listened to by so many.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so it's important that you get the funding. What do you think about defunding the police?
I think that's the most absurd crap I've ever heard in my life.
If there's a huge component of mental illness here that's involved with these kids, and there's other issues too with parent involvement and...
Well, what I will say is this, again, defunding the police is absolutely absurd. It is. Now, do I think the reform needs to change in order for MPD? Yes, I do. I think it definitely needs to be a reform, because the reform that they have right now is set up for officers to walk away from things like this that they do.
Yeah.
And so, no. I don't think that disbanding the police is going to do anything but cause a greater chaos and confusion in the city of Minneapolis.
That's what I was concerned about. Like, how is that going to play out?
No, it's not going to play out. I mean, honestly, the violence that's going on right now,
yeah,
I mean, the police department is really taking a back seat right now. That's the God's honest truth. I know. I see it because of all the things that's going on. Even over in Uptown, when the shooting occurred, it wasn't until one of us called one of the officers that was in charge and said, "Hey, we need your help." And then they deployed. They didn't even come right away.
Oh.
And
that's not helpful.
At all. So, you know, the reform needs to change in which they're able to work under. And I think that these community relationships that they're building, like with my organizations and others, that needs to be expanded.
Okay.
So, you know, it's really saddening and really sickening, honestly, that the council would even take this approach.
Yeah.
And then,
because are all the council members on the Minneapolis council, are they all?
They
in
all.
Favor
it was.
Of this?
It was unanimous. It was unanimous. And then what's crazy is here it is. It's been 2 months. We waiting on paychecks from young men and women that's been out there for the last 3 months, helping you fight this fight.
Yeah.
And you haven't paid them yet, but yet you got personal security detail, and you on COVID leave in your house. For $4,500 a day. That is absolutely absurd.
Yeah.
And so when the people of Minneapolis is going to them polls and vote, you better start remembering the stuff that's happening for the people that you voted for. That is essentially how all of this is going to change. You need to start putting the right people in there.
Yeah.
And not the people that's just going to get in front of you to tell you what you want to hear. And then when they get in office, they do something totally different. Because to me, that's strategically what's happening right now.
Yeah, and so part of this, it to me, is the characteristics of an authentic leader. You know, that they need to have certain core values.
Absolutely.
So it's not enough to be, you know, voting for the issue or the policy that they're trying to say that they're going to be doing.
Exactly.
But also looking at the person and their characteristics.
Absolutely.
You know, are they talking the walk? Do they have some stake in the game?
Absolutely.
You know,
I agree
it's
with
just
you.
Like, it's to me, it's just like business ownership. You know, when people are giving out funding, the funders, the private investors, always want to see that the entrepreneur has skin in the game.
Absolutely.
And I think our politicians need to have skin in the game in their communities. They need to be involved in resolving these violent issues because they are so systemic.
Absolutely.
But we need everybody kind of coming together to problem solve and doing the work.
Because like I stated when I first sat down, I told Miss Nancy that I'm sitting here. Mind you, I'm sitting at her home. Here it is, a Caucasian woman living in Golden Valley reaches out to me after seeing me on the news and invite me to her home. These are the things that needs to happen. These are the things that need to occur. Again, most people are trying to make this a black and white issue. This is a human issue. This is affecting everybody. And just FYI, for those individuals that's living like in Plymouth and Minnetonka and Golden Valley and Eden Prairie, you feel as though, you may think as though, like, well, this has no bearing on me at all. Well, yeah, it does. If you're a human being, this should be affecting you.
Yeah.
Period. It's no ifs, ands, whats, or buts about it. This should be affecting you. You know, I said, and I'll say it again, from an accountability standpoint, we can't expect change in the black community until we're willing to change. A change of pace brings about growth. And us out here, literally every opportunity we get, we shooting and trying to kill each other. But then we'll run down the street over here and say, man, you ain't got no right to do that. Well, murder is murder. Murder is murder.
Yeah.
And again, we need to deal with the in-house issues within our own community. And then is when things will start changing.
So what are some of the in-house issues?
I mean, honestly, what I've gotten over the last couple of weeks is, you know, a lot of these little, as they call them, disagreements, or they call them beefs, started in the wintertime over Facebook.
Oh.
Like, what you say? Well, when I see you, I'm going to do this. Well, when I see you, I'm going to do that. And when they see each other, they try to do it. It's the most absurd crap I've ever heard in my life. I ain't never seen you a day in my life, but I'm finna try to hurt you because of what you said on Facebook. Like, is this a joke? And it's what true. People need to understand is this. A lot of these issues that be happening come from the young women.
Hmm.
They call their boyfriends. He called me a B-I-T-C-H. Now he gonna defend her honor. Now he, I mean, definitely when I tell you it's senseless, it is, I'm talking about obscenely senseless.
Yeah.
So, you know, a kid myself growing up on the south side of Chicago, and I seen it all.
Yeah.
Listen to me, I seen it all. And, you know, when I see what's happening now versus what used to happen back in Chicago.
Yeah.
It's absolutely absurd. It's absolutely absurd. Even back in Chicago, when I look back, when I was 13, 14, 15 years old, standing up and call myself believing in something that wasn't even true. So, again, that's the message to these young men and women. I mean, wait a minute. You mean to tell me you're willing to lose your life because you live on 20th Avenue? Like, say you live on 20th Avenue, now your little clique is called the 20th Avenue clique. That street was here before you was born. That street is going to be here when you dead and gone. So you mean to tell me you wouldn't have put your life on the line for a street that's going to always be there? I mean, it's almost to a point of laughing, but the reality of it is, it's the most absurd stuff I've ever heard.
Yeah.
So, you know, you know, we out there boots on the ground in the evenings. We walking through the neighborhoods. We talking to these young men and women. We at the club scenes where a lot of the violence is starting to erupt at. We out there talking to them. And my prayer is that, you know, we able to continue to.
Yeah, yeah. So if I think there's also problems with our legal system where there's no sense of accountability, where you're... So before you're even admitting whether or not you did something, they're working out the outcome, right? Well, if you say that you're guilty, here's what your path is, your legal path. And if you say you didn't do it, then here are some other and maybe three other options that you have that you normally didn't have if you said that you did it.
Right.
Let's just take a look at our whole legal system. And and let's take a step back and say, what if... we sorted out what the problem, what happened, and then who's accountable for doing what.
Absolutely.
Then we figure out what makes sense to do.
I agree with you.
I mean, punishment upon punishment doesn't give these kids communication skills or how to deal with conflict or rewiring their brain.
Yeah.
There's no meditation. There's no psychological addressing of their issues. There's no formal way that they can physically work through the trauma in their bodies, out of their bodies, when they're incarcerated for, you know, these crimes that have become so horrific and stupid.
So one of the things that I am working on as well, again, a man of many hats within the organization, but...
Yeah. I appreciate your commitment.
But zeroing in on the things that are affecting the different communities. So when the Department of Corrections got their new person in charge, he came to North Minneapolis to Shiloh Temple and had a meeting with the community in regards to some of the things that was happening in the Department of Corrections. So kudos to that young man, first of all.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that I'm doing next month is I am putting together an event to bring awareness to mental health, again, on the account of my son.
Yeah.
Which you see on my license plate say X Factor. His name was Xavier. So I should call him X Factor.
Sweet.
As well as looking at these, what they call reform.
Yeah.
Policies.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's your reform to give a kid 10 years for a second degree assault, then that's not reform. And now, granted, some of these crimes are very heinous. These young men and women, they need to be punished for what they did.
They need to be taken out of, of circulation in the community.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, but that reform can look like a young man coming in there 17, 18 years old. First of all, someone there that's helping them with the transition from regular life to prison life, again, psychologist, checking on them twice a week for the first 30 days, right? Helping them with that transition. Having a program set up in there that, one, they can get their education, they can work, things to that magnitude, instead of just saying, okay, well, your reform is you're going to do 10 years in prison, and don't help them with their underlying issues. So guess what? Now, you got a young man or young woman coming home from prison from doing 10 years, and they never got the help that they need in the first place. Yeah, now that rage done doubled.
Yeah.
So now they come right back home.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? It's going to be 10 times worse.
Yeah.
And that's what you're seeing. You're seeing a lot of these young men and women that's coming home from prison, they get right back into the same systemic racism,
yeah,
and they get right back with the same people they was hanging out with before they left, and boom.
Yeah.
Now it's something on a grander stage. So
one of the saddest things I learned about George Floyd was, you know, he moved here to start over.
Yes. I mean, oftentimes, and just like a lot of people that come here from, say, Detroit or Chicago or L.A., when I first got here to Minnesota back in 1991, it was because how diverse it was. I loved the fact that it was so diverse, right? Growing up on the south side of Chicago in the projects, you know, my grandparents, I was raised with my grandparents.
Mm.
And my grandfather was a good old Southern man. And he didn't allow us to use race. He started at the Ford Motor Plant as a janitor making 10 cents an hour.
Mm.
10 cents. When he retired, he was executive vice president of productions at that same Ford Motor Plant. So we wasn't able to come on, you know, granddaddy, this white dude, and he like, man, said to me, and I say this to these kids all the time, the only person that's going to hinder your growth in life is you. Yeah, you may have to work a little bit harder, but the only person that's going to hurt you or hinder you in your growth in life is you. So like myself, when I came home from prison, the first thing I said to myself was, I went to prison because of the choice and the decision that I made.
Mm.
When I started looking at things,
yeah,
from an accountability standpoint, it was then and only then when I was able to start growing as an individual. And since I've been home, I have not had a damn traffic ticket. Nothing in 26 years. I don't drink. I don't get high. I don't do any of those things because those were all the things I did before I went to prison. So to come home and do the same thing that got me put in, like that was absurd. So again, when I say I'm talking to these kids left and right, 12 o'clock in the morning, 1 o'clock in the morning, like, and they know this about me because I've always shared my life with them. So, because most times you get people that come and say, well, you know, you shouldn't do this and do that. And them kids look at them like, how you know?
Yeah.
Like, you have no clue. Well, they can't say that to me because, yeah, I do have a clue.
Yeah.
I've been there. I've done that. Right?
Yeah.
And so when people look at me now as to where I was to where I am,
yeah,
it's easy for them to say, like, I'm with Trey. I'm going to rock with Trey 100%.
Yeah.
Part of my team, Cindy, Dana, Brittany, Miss Booker, Natalie, her daughter, Ariana, my son, Trenton, et cetera. Like, these are individuals that came out the first time I did a food drive, and they've been with me every day since I started. I'm talking about Cindy and Dana live in Wisconsin. They don't even live in Minnesota. They come over here every weekend to be a part of what We Push for Peace is doing.
See, and when you've got like such a solid mission like that.
Absolutely.
You know, the commitment is strong to show up and help out.
Yes.
And so I appreciate that you're like, you have organized your community, your business, your organization to really be at the hot spots. So how you deliver your service is very hands-on for the community needs at that point in time.
Absolutely.
So it's crisis oriented.
Absolutely.
You need an organization that is trained in crisis.
Yes.
Because it's a whole different skill set,
yeah,
than once things are settled and you can come in. And that, the training that I imagine you provide with that is like boots on the ground and here we go. But you're
But I also want to say this real quick,
yeah,
is that, you know, to me, a part of the unsung heroes is like women like Nancy. that gives my voice a platform to be heard by thousands on her podcast. Because oftentimes, again, smaller organizations like myself, people don't know. They don't have a clue as to who We Push for Peace is. I was at a restaurant the other day having a meeting with a group of men, and it was a couple of Caucasian women walked up to me, and one of them was crying. And she shook my hand, and she said, "I seen you on the news." And she said, "Thank you so much." And it's individuals like you. That creates a different platform for individuals like me to continue to do specifically what I'm doing.
And this is what it's taking. This is what, you know, this is what it's always taken.
Absolutely.
You know, people working together.
Absolutely.
All kinds of backgrounds.
And I love that you said that, because that is very important to me. That is very imperative. I showcase that in everything I do. If you look at the website, wepushforpeace.com, and you look at the pictures, it's very diverse. Very, very, very diverse. Yeah. And because, again, this is not a black and white issue.
Right.
This is a human issue. It truly is.
Yeah.
It's truly a human issue. It's as if when George Floyd, you know, and to some of the Caucasian brothers and sisters in which I choose to call them, because they are. My grandfather had a white buddy back in the middle 70s. They used to work at the Ford plant. And he used to come over and have a drink with my grandfather every now and then. And every time he came to the projects, everybody would be looking like, "Man, what that white dude doing over here?" type of deal.
Yeah.
And so I asked my grandfather one day, I said, "So, what is this?" And he was like, "What you mean, what's this?" This was the first thing he taught me about race. And his name was Chuck. The white guy's name was Chuck. And he said, "Chuck, come here for a minute." Now, unbeknownst to me, Chuck and my grandfather, Chuck was the reason why my grandfather came to Chicago from Arkansas after World War II. Chuck was the one that called my grandfather to get him the job at Ford Motor Plant. They was in World War II together.
Oh.
And unbeknownst to me,
yeah.
So my grandfather had a safety pin, and he poked his finger, and he started bleeding. He said, "Chuck, come here for a minute." They had been drinking, you know, they a little tipsy. And Chuck said, "Well, what you want, Odell?" And he said, "Give me your finger," and poked his finger. And my grandfather said, "Tell me what's different." And right. I looked and I said, "Well, he bleeding like you." He said, "My point exactly." He said, "When you start learning how to get to know individuals from the inside out versus the outside in," he said, "you're going to be a whole new person, young man." And that's the way I was raised.
Yeah.
That's specifically the way I was raised. So again, when people try to use this platform to divide and conquer and divide the different cultures and the different divisions of race and a religion and et cetera,
us all small.
This is the moment for us to bridge those gaps.
Yeah.
Bridge
this
them.
Is the moment.
You know what? I'm 47 years of age, and Lord knows, I hope we don't have to deal with this again. But my personal opinion is, I don't think we're going to have this platform like this ever again.
Oh, that's good.
In my
hear.
Lifetime, I don't think the platform is going to be set like it is right now, whereas that we can bridge the gaps between law enforcement, the different communities, different religions, the different races, the different cultures.
Yeah.
I don't think it will be.
So one of the skill sets that entrepreneurs have, and they're very, very good at it, is spotting opportunities. You know, they are can do it like no other business. And I see that in you, that you see the opportunities and that you are able to organize to deploy what's needed in the different areas. And that you can do over a long period of time.
Yes, ma'am.
And when we talk about defunding the police, no, restructure the allocations and the definitions of how police are working.
Absolutely.
And get more people in there who are in the neighborhoods, who know the people in the neighborhoods.
Absolutely.
So we can figure out more human ways in which to treat each other.
And again, I think the platform is set for those things to happen.
Yeah.
You know, again, defunding the police is one of the most absurd things I've ever heard in my life. Now, you know, changing them and the policies and procedures in which they're able to work. You know, it used to be a point they can just say, "Well, I fear for my life." Guess what? Okay, that's all it took. Well, no, we can't. Don't allow them to use that as no platform. In the last 50 years, there has been one conviction with Minneapolis police. 50 years. Go figure, is Muhammad, the black guy that unfortunately killed Christine over on 52nd, et cetera.
Oh, yeah.
In 50 years. So, yeah, we fired him. Yeah, we charged him. Let me tell you something right now. If those guys don't get convicted, you think you've seen something just now. And over the last month or so, you think you've seen something just now. Watch what happened if they don't get convicted. So it's one thing to charge them, but the convictions need to happen now. Like, I mean, listen here. It's no debatable question about what America's seen on that video.
Right.
It ain't nothing you can try to discuss. It ain't nothing that you can say. It ain't nothing that you can try to hide behind. The bottom line is you committed murder. And in the black community, if a murder occurs, somebody with them, that person don't say nothing. That person get just as much time as the person that committed the murder. So guess what? You standing there, bear witness to a young man getting murdered,
yeah,
and you don't do nothing.
Right. Like, you're just as guilty.
And one of the attorneys That's for one of the saying. Other officers said that he kept saying, well, maybe we should turn him over. Maybe, well, no, if he not listening to me, I'm going to put, hey, man, hey, like, come on. Like, he handcuffed. He subdued. It is nothing that this man can do to you. Absolutely nothing. And if you look at that video and you look how that officer looked at that camera that was recording him, if that wasn't the most devilish look I've ever seen in my life, man, he just was like,
I know.
Like,
yeah.
I know what I'm doing. Yeah. I mean, those individuals need to be made example out of, period, point blank. Then we can continue to grow as a community. But if them guys don't get charged, I mean, if they don't get convicted, Lord, but listen, I pray every day right now. I've been praying every day.
Yeah.
Because I have friends that flat out say to me, you know they're not going to get convicted. So yeah. We shall see.
Yeah, and our legal system needs to start working. This is where we need to look at. It's the police department and the funding, but also our legal system needs to work for all people. Yeah.
It can't just work for you. You're absolutely right. You couldn't have said it no better. That's our reality.
Yeah. So I would like to promote for people to give some donations to Trahern Pollard. He's really working hard for all of us. And if he's able to get more funding, he can get more people who are deployed in the neighborhoods and getting to know these kids on a much grander scale.
Absolutely.
So that they have male figures and female figures that are helping them and their lives will get better.
Yes, I actually have a meeting on Wednesday with a psychologist firm that wants to partner with me to be of service to these young men and women as we're bringing them into the program. We don't want to just go to these young men and women and say, hey, you need to stop the violence. They've been hearing that for the last probably 10 years of their life.
Yeah,
we want to go say, hey, not only do we want to help you and orchestrate you to stop the violence, but I also have an opportunity for you.
Yeah.
I want to hire you when we push for peace. And this is our mission. And this is going to give you an opportunity to be a part of something way bigger than yourself.
Right.
The way we start is, one, you're going to fill out an application. You're going to work for We Push for Peace. I'm going to pay you $20 an hour. But before you start, you got a 3-week session with this psychologist. I want to see where you are mentally and emotionally.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Huge. Exactly.
Very so. Huge. Yeah. Yeah. Great idea. Yeah. Terrific. So as you can hear, he's got a lot of practical ideas that will profoundly change our communities for the better. So thanks so much for being here.
I can't thank you enough, Nancy. I know this relationship is just starting. We have a lot that we can accomplish.
Great.
And I'm looking forward to it.
I'm all in.
So thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. All right. And thanks, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, mon frère, brother from another mother. Yeah.
I'm all in too.
Hear that? Mike's all in too. I hope you are too. Donate today and keep listening. And I'm going to keep bringing you voices that will help us carve out a greater place that we can live, breathe, and work. So keep tuning in, and we'll see y'all next week. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become more effective as a business owner? Do you want to reinvent yourself or evolve as you redesign your business? This is a dual innovation process. Are you ready to take charge of who you next become? If the answer is yes, I've been developing and implementing mentoring programs to thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and business owners and their teams since 1992. I totally love it and feel I'm on this planet to involve the leadership in the world from the inside out. Of course, this means seeing myself as a work in progress, which is beneficial to you because I'm not stagnant and I'm motivated to create and bring you incredible programming all the time. So here's a few ways that you can get involved in our WeMentor self-leadership community. You can subscribe for free through WeMentor.com to the podcast. You can also find it on Apple Podcasts, which used to be iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, Blueberry Directory, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn Radio, which is where you can shout out your request on smart home device through Alexa, Cortana, Amazon Echo, and Google Home. You can also become a sponsor of this program and support what's happening here in all these meaningful conversations. Or you can get one-on-one mentoring and go at your own pace as you evolve into the leader that you've always wanted to become. You can join a WeMentor Mini Lab, which we offer several times during the year. We're focused on some element of self-leadership and your progress toward becoming more effective. And the last and final way in which you can get involved in WeMentor's self-leadership community is by joining a one-year entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab where we dig into the details and help you with the operational along with your leadership skills so you can evolve with your entity and really, really progress in building the life that you've always wanted to build. So please check out WeMentor.com. You can email me, Nancy, at WeMentor.com, or call me, 1-612-804-8920. All right, keep listening, and we'll see you next week.